Sportsnet 650. Our friend Elliot Friedman, who was down at the draft in Dallas, they had to tape a couple 31 Thoughts podcasts down there, and he joins us now. How are you?
I'm good, Walker. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. So what happened? Like, so you taped the 31 Thoughts after, as I understand it, after the draft, but then all the movement came
after day one.
Yeah, then all the movement came on Saturday, so you had to do another one.
Yes. This is very hard work.
What were you? Were you a little bit surprised? And I know there's reasons for it, but we had hyped up the draft weekend like, oh, get ready for these trades, and there was really only the Grubauer and the Calgary blockbuster. At what point did you kind of come to the realization of you know what, like this weekend it's really not going to be that weekend?
I think I kind of realized it when Montreal didn't do anything. Hello?
Yep. No, I'm just ruminating on that. And when was that?
Yeah, when like Friday night. Like yeah. on Friday night when, you know, Montreal didn't really do much and I didn't really see them. I know they tried and the Pacioretty thing kind of fell through. That's kind of when I thought we were in a position where we were going to get a lot less than we kind of hoped and thought.
What surprised you the most about draft weekend, Elliot?
Well, that nothing really happened. I've got to tell you, you probably hit it there, Rintoul, that nothing really occurred. There was a lot of talk. It didn't really go anywhere. I think that was kind of the thing that kind of surprised me the most. I think I was also surprised, like, how it unfolded. You know, I didn't think Noah Dobson was going to fall to 12. You know, I think all of a sudden New York was kind of sitting there and going, wait a second, we're going to end up with two players that we never thought we were going to get. You know, the fact that Zadina fell to 6, I think Detroit was sitting there going, all of a sudden, we're going to get Zadina. And they weren't planning on getting Zadina, and they were thinking of getting center and D, and all of a sudden they ended up with him. And I have to tell you, Vancouver surprised me a bit. Like, not that it's a bad pick. Like, I don't think it's Quinn Hughes was a bad pick at all. But if you told me that of that group of defensemen that he was going to be the first one to go, I would have been surprised. I thought it was going to be Dobson or it was going to be Bouchard. And they took Hughes, and they were excited, and I know everybody in Vancouver, you know, there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions there. I don't know that it's right or wrong. I was just surprised because most people were telling me it was going to be after Deline, it was going to be Bouchard or Dobson that was going first.
Well, it's interesting because, as you said, Vancouver is an interesting market in terms of reaction and.
Are you trying to get me on trouble again?
No, I'm not. I'm not, but it's a loud market. I've learned that. You've learned that. And Scotty made the point, and it's true. Jim Benning has now had 5 drafts and 6 first-round picks. This was the most quiet out of any draft pick where, like 95% of Canuck fans said, oh, good, we got that guy at 7, and we're happy about it. Like, there wasn't a huge pushback. There was if Zadina would have been available at 7, yeah, now we're maybe talking about you know the dam bursting a little bit, but it was it was amazing how kind of consensus Jim Benning bought himself a little bit of time with a non-controversial pick here.
Is it also because like all your fan base is sitting there hoping that they get his brother next year?
Maybe, but like that, like he said something on our airwaves, like, yeah, I'd love to play in Vancouver. Everybody freaked out. It's like, well, he's going to be the number one overall pick. Like, it doesn't matter if he wants to come to your market or not. You pick him or you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you know, like I've heard a lot of good things about Quinn Hughes. Like, I'll tell you this, like, you know, in Detroit, you know, when they were looking for center and D, you know, Blashill and Dan Bilesman, who's now his assistant coach, they were really, you know, they were really high on him after the Worlds. You know, he did a really nice job. So I think I thought he might be going to Detroit. I wasn't surprised he fell past Detroit when Zadina was there. I think the impression I kind of got was Detroit kind of dropped everything after he dropped and they said, okay, we got to take this guy because he's the best player. But I had nobody knocking Quinn Hughes to me. I think Edmonton was really happy. They were thinking of trading up to get Bouchard, and they got him. You know, I think the Islanders were ecstatic with what they got. The picks that really threw the draft, no question, were Montreal and Arizona. And I get them. You know, I mean, you got to have centers. And the Canadians said they wanted centers, and Arizona wanted to get a center. And, I was impressed that Arizona kept that pick quiet, because not too many people saw that coming, but I guess they decided 2 months earlier that they were going to take that kid.
Elliot Friedman joining us here on Sportsnet 650. One of the big reasons to me, Elliot, that the Canucks fan base was so happy is that it's a consistency of philosophy where the Canucks, 2 years in a row now with their first-round pick, have emphasized skill and skating above size and meat and potatoes hockey, which was a different philosophy in the past. And whether it works out or not, they were willing to swing on skill. That's been an interesting conversation in the NHL for a number of years here. Do you think there's still much of a divide, or do you think most teams still feel that same way that the Canucks have bought into here the last couple of seasons?
Well, no, I think that, I mean, if you look at the Stanley Cup final this year, when Vegas won the West by really outworking everyone and with skill. But, you know, Mike Bossy was at the Stanley Cup final. He works for TVA. And, you know, Mike Bossy kind of knows what he's talking about. And he said that hard work beats skill, but hard work with skill beats everything. And, like, I looked at that Vegas team, man. That Vegas team got there this year with a chip on its shoulder and a drive to work. And they're talented guys. And then, you know, everybody talks about the skill that the Capitals have. And they do have a lot of skill. But they were tough. They were big. They grinded you down. And they were disciplined. Like, Vegas couldn't do anything against them. And, you know, I just think that what it proves is that you have to have great players who are driven. And you don't necessarily need to have size, but you need to have will. And to me, that's always been the thing that's lost in this debate, is will is the most important thing. To win the Stanley Cup, it's hard. The NHL, the 82 games you get in the regular season and the maximum 28 you get in the playoffs, it's a grind. And to me, like, I looked at those two teams that reached the final this year, they had the ability to grind through it. They were, you know, everybody talks about the skill of the Capitals, that they're a skilled team. I saw a really tough team, a team that was, you know, battle-hardened. And I think that's what you have to have. Like, to me, the question about Quinn Hughes is not, you know, the question about the guys you draft is not so much their skill, because I think that he's really skilled. But when he gets to the NHL and he goes through the grind, how is he going to handle it? And just because maybe, for argument's sake, he doesn't handle it well at 2021, doesn't mean he's not going to handle it better at 25 or 28 or 31 or whatever it is. And I just think he's a guy that, from what I understand about him, and I know his dad a little bit, like, he understands that it's going to be a process and he's going to have to learn through it. And that's the best thing I heard about that kid.
Elliot, John Tavares, that's the first domino. We all know it. He's taking the pitches this week. Once he makes a decision, who's next, or what tier of player is next on the shopping list for teams?
Well, I think that unlocks a bit with Paul Stastny. I think that unlocks a bit for Buffalo and Ryan O'Reilly. You know, there's no question about that. I think that those guys become the guys that everybody looks at. I think there's, you know, the one thing is, if San Jose doesn't get him, you know, where are they going to spend their money? I believe they're extending Logan Couture, and that will tie up some of their cash. But, you know, I think also, like, what's that going to mean for O'Reilly? What's the market going to be for him? What's the market going to be for Stastny? What's the market going to be for a guy like JVR? I think that there are teams here that might be spending a bit of money that are going to kind of wait and see, okay, what happens with Tavares? So But I think the guys that affects the most are probably Stastny and O'Reilly.
So once that tier of free agents goes, do you think then we are going to see some activity in terms of trades, or do you think that's going to take further into the summer?
No, you know what I think? One thing I think that's really been interesting is, and you guys have seen it a little bit already, is I had some agents tell me that they really think we're going to see more arbitration cases than ever. Like, I think there have been, in the last 5 years, I think there's been five rulings in 124 cases. I did my math the other day, as long as it was good. Now, there's some cases where, like, players like Piquet Subban was one and Tyson Berry was another. They had their hearing, and then they reached a deal before they came out of their hearing. But I think there were only five cases where a ruling actually came down, and one of those was Vladimir Sobotka, who went to the KHL, and St. Louis basically won in absentia. You know, I think that so that really has a factor on this. And we've seen some cases now, and you guys had one with Pouliot, where teams didn't qualify guys because they said, we won't like your ARB award, but we'd rather make you another deal. You know, Washington's trying that with Devontae Smith-Pelly, too. So I think it's pretty interesting. And what that's going to mean is, if you get ARB cases, Scott, you get another buyout period. And if there's a certain number, it's just over $4 million, where if you lose the case, you can walk away from the player. So I think the whole possibility of arbitration is going to add another level to this. How many people file? Does that mean teams use another buyout? Is anybody walked away from? I think there is the potential for other stuff to happen in the summer because of this.
Elliot Friedman joins us in the program, Walker and Tool Sportsnet 650. The courtship period, I mean, it's great for the Stamkos watch a couple of years ago. It's great for the Tavares watch. But there's other, you know, free agents, ones we don't talk about on a daily basis, that their agents are getting a lot of calls and they're getting a few smaller pitches. What does this mean for the smaller markets, I suppose? Not that Vancouver is one of them, but the list of franchises that aren't necessarily the Rangers, the Kings, the Leafs of the world. Does it help a Vancouver or a Calgary or an Edmonton this period?
I think what it does is, I know some agents who really hate it because they think it gives up too much information of what guys are going to get. And I know some teams who really hate it because they think it drives up price. It's funny. Like, they look at it very differently. The agents think it allows the teams to keep down price, and the teams think it allows the agents to drive up price. I think what it allows you to do is really decide how much it's going to cost you to sign someone. Like, I know there's a lot of talk in your city about Riley Nash and Tyler Bozak, okay? What Vancouver is going to know, and one agent told me it takes you 3 days to really figure out what's going on. I guarantee you the Canucks know by now how much interest there is in the guys they're interested in and probably what it's going to cost them. I think you have a really good idea by now. So I think if you're in Vancouver and then you're trying to see, do we really want to see somebody? Do we want to invite somebody here, or do we want to go to this player? I think that's what this allows you to do. Like, the thing is that I would want is, if I'm Vancouver or anybody else and I'm all in on someone, I want to see them. You know, I want to see them. I want to talk to them. You know, you're always worried that, you know, a guy can put on his best face. But I think if you're really skilled at what you're doing, you can tell if someone's being phony or not being phony. But the one thing I would want is, I would want to see the guy. And this gives you an opportunity to say, look, we're prepared to make you a big pitch, but we want you to come here first. Now, technically, you're not allowed to make offers. But, like, you know how this works. It's like, well, if you want to come here, you know, we'll put you on the fourth floor in the 15th room. Everybody knows what they're all talking about. Yeah. But the fact is, like, I think that's what this allows you to do, is get an idea of who your competition is, how much it's going to cost you, And can you get a guy to visit you or you visit them?
Everybody's been speculating as to what John Tavares really wants. Is this another case of Stamkos, Elliott, where none of us really know, or are you hearing some rumblings as to what the priority list might look like?
You know, I have said the whole time that I really believe that, you know, you're going to have to pull him away from New York. But I'll tell you this, like, I think Doug Wilson is a hell of a salesman. And I think Kyle Dubas is one too. And I don't say that negatively. I've just spent enough time around these people to kind of understand a bit the way they think and the way they do things. If I was the Islanders, like, you know, I think you'd be confident, but you're always nervous. Like, you don't know what's going on in these meetings. The other thing too is, like, you know, Steve Yzerman's going to walk in there and he's going to say, do you have a better chance to win the Stanley Cup than with this roster? And I would like, the first thing foremost is that he wants to win. I believe that's what he cares about the most. He wants to win. And I think if you're in New York, you're sitting there and you're saying, how worried are we that someone else is going to go in there and convince him that he's going to be able to win much easier than with us?
Because this is
that's what you're worried about.
Because this isn't a bit piece, right? Like, you can bet on yourself. And if John Tavares looks at himself with Tampa or San Jose or even Toronto, like people are picking that team to win the Stanley Cup. He just spent the better part of a decade with the Islanders, and how close does he really feel that they are with him?
You know, I was speaking to Calvin DeHaan today because I was writing I'm going to write something about him. And, you know, he obviously knows Tavares well. And, you know, he doesn't want to give away what Tavares is thinking because he doesn't want to, you know, he feels that Tavares has earned the right to make the choice. He doesn't want to throw any gasoline on the fire. But the one thing he did say is that Tavares is very methodical. And he's not surprised he's doing it this way because he could see Tavares sitting there and saying, I want to hear all these pitches out and I want all the information. So, I think this is kind of, I'm not surprised he's doing it this way. And I agree with you, Andrew. Like, he's sitting there and he's saying, okay, I really want to win in New York. Are any of these guys going to be able to convince me that I'm going to be happier somewhere else? And that's what he's going to let them do. And I think, one of my buddies today was texting me and he's like, this is like when you're convinced you're going to be married to your fiance and she goes on her stag and you're like, is anything going to happen here?
There's going to be pitches
that I'm going to be in trouble with. And I think that's exactly what this is.
Well, I mean, listen, if your wife is good looking enough, there's pitches every Friday night, right? You gotta be comfortable. You gotta be confident.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like.
He is Elliott Friedman.
I'll tell you this, my wife doesn't worry about that ever.
You and me both.
He is Elliott Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, and 31 Thoughts and 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thank you. Busy few days for you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have yourself.
See you later. That is Elliott Friedman, our weekly visit.